Welcome to The Big Picture with your host, Harrison Newton.
Hit the subscribe and share the word.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the show. It's Harrison and today with me, I thought it was about time I actually got my girlfriend on the show. So welcome Shania.
Hello.
How does it feel to finally make the cut?
privileged.
It only took about 12 episodes, so yeah. I'm really scraping the barrel these days.
Ouch.
Just to tell everyone a little bit about yourself, you're a premier soccer player, so you're a competitive person who's actually really tried hard on something that I struggle with. You work in social media marketing, so you know a bit too much about social media and Instagram. And lastly, you're just into your second year of working, so a topic I always love to talk about is the transition from uni to working. So basically, from my experience, everyone talks to you about the transition from high school to uni, but one that felt just as hard was going from uni to working. Because no one warns you about it and it's this huge surprise, it really punches you in the face. Did you feel punched in the face?
Yes, I did.
A pretty hard punch.
Yeah, very hard.
Yeah, and I actually watched my three sisters go through it a lot, and I noticed the amount of crying that happens in your first couple of years in work. I couldn't quite get over it, especially my older sister, looking at her, how upset she would get about these things that didn't seem like big deals. But it is a really challenging and sometimes horrible part. Because I guess at uni you've gone from the top rung to the lowest rung, and I remember talking to this guy in work because I didn't quite get it. But there's this real thought in the business world that the young people have to be in the trenches for a couple of years, so a bit of a hazing period.
I guess so. I think, well, when you go from school to uni, everyone's just like, well, what are you going to choose? Like, what degree are you going to have? Or, like, are you going to start working now? And then once you get to, like, graduating uni, you're like, okay, now what? Like, how do I get a job? Do people come and find me, or do I have to find them?
Well, it's the first time in your whole life where you haven't had your hands on a rail. So yeah, there's a bit of an easy path up until sort of 21, whether you go to uni or sort of get straight into something. But once you're out of uni, you go from having no choices to infinity choices almost.
It's a bit overwhelming. Yeah.
More than overwhelming, because it's so scary, because it's like, hey, here's 1,000 different lives you can lead.
I know.
What industry and what job do you want? Because that's going to affect your life.
Yeah.
That's going to affect who you end up with and
your
where you go.
Your first choice is like the biggest
choice ever, because that starts the path.
It's like what sets you up.
Yeah.
It's what allows you to get on the right path to be able to have a successful future.
Yeah, because they really say there's some great stats about if you get on a good graduate program, or just making sure that first job is a good job can help a lot. But my first job was not a good job. I was actually traveling around Asia and I got really sick and pitched up in like a bamboo hut for a month in Thailand and just was sweating profusely until I had to come back to New Zealand. But anyway, I landed back and my dad, who's a traditional person, was like, time for a job. And at the time, there was a few out there, but I ended up, because I wanted to do business, getting an accounting job. And that was a horrible job. And I guess for me, that was the real whack, because you see your whole life ahead of you. And you're looking around at people in the business and you're like, this is me. This is going to be my grind for the rest of my life. And working's not fun.
Yeah.
But in that time, you don't quite realize that this isn't forever.
I think my dad used to say to me when I first got my first full-time job last year, I came home like on multiple days being like, oh, I'm so tired. and, you know, working is so hard. And Dad would be like, you've got like another 6 years, like just, you know, you can't like complain. You're in your first year. You got 6 years to go.
But this is what
that made me feel depressed.
I know, people, older people love telling you that stat because there's a real sense of like, I've done it, mate.
It's like a kick in the face. You're like, really? Is this really what my life is going to turn out to be? Like,
well,
just working hard?
Well, it's a kick in the face, and then you go talk to a boomer, and then they throw sand in the eyes about how this is you for the rest of life.
Yeah, I think people who say to you, though, like, find a job that you're really passionate about, but there's not a lot of people who do that. There's not a lot of people that actually like their job. They get like 10 years in doing it and then they're like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You know, like there's only a handful of people who actually find the right passions that they love and then they're just doing it for the fact that it's like what they love. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
I think a lot of people work for money and then there's people who work for passion and for drive and love.
Oh, for me, I try and get a good balance of something that's gonna let me buy bread in the evening and doing something that's stimulating enough and has the hope that my dream job in 20 years is getting closer and I'm angling towards that. Just a bit of hope helps too.
Yeah.
But I think, like you were saying, a lot of people get into uni and they pick a career path without actually following someone and doing that job for a day or two. And then they come out and then they actually understand the career. So the example I like to use, and I love this example, is lawyers. So you'll normally see the kids who are good at English and history go to university and the, you know, most professional English-based subject is law. So they get on their high horse, they have their little law camps, and it looks like a great time until they come out into the grad programs. And then they're getting the lowest wages. They're working 50, 60 hours. And what they don't realize about law is that it's a lot of reading the fine print. It's like reading a terms and conditions warranty
that
you
click.
Yeah. So that's the punch of the face I'm talking about, you know, that disconnect between what you want to be doing and what you actually end up doing. And for me, I was an accountant, you know. That was
I think
tough.
Though, like, so many people nowadays, they do a degree and like halfway through they're like, I don't even like it. I don't even know why I'm doing this degree. And then, you know, they graduate and then they're like, maybe I'll try this. And then they go back into uni and they do something else. And by like the time that they're, you know, 30, they haven't actually had a full-time job. They've just had, you know, trying out different degrees because they didn't know initially what they wanted. But I think when you go to uni, there needs to be that guidance, not through just university to going through to full-time work, but there needs to be guidance, I think, from primary school. You need to find your passions and what you like as a child to then pick your classes when you get into intermediate and you get into high school. And then that helps with finding what you love to do and what you want to try and do for university.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like you're kind of coming through your full, you know, schooling life, finding that's your time to find yourself in a way of like what you want to do long term.
Exactly. But what you're trying to say and getting back to being punched in the face by a job is because of that lack of education when you're going from high school to uni and actually that lack of understanding. That is one of those key contributors to that horrible period of going from uni to job is because you just didn't know and you wish you could go back with the information you got and make a better decision.
Yeah, I think so.
So you got that aspect of a reality check, like that bloke said, being in the trenches and the reality of, holy shit, how did I become an accountant, you know?
Yeah.
But the other big part of it is how much of a lifestyle change it is. And another thing that everyone who starts working has to deal with is actually being a real adult. And by real adult, I mean working 40 hours a week. And some people work more than that. New Zealanders, surprisingly, have one of the highest working hours in the Western world. Like, we actually work quite a lot. Tradies and stuff.
Well, everyone. Working is not only like at work, you also have to come home and work, because you're technically having to work to make yourself food and work to keep the house clean and go and do all your chores. That's also working technically, because you're using up your brain power to have to keep yourself alive, you know.
And I think that's why everyone at the end of the day just melts into the couch. Yes. Watch TV.
It's so true. Like, you're just like tired. You're like, I'm tired. I'm done with the day. I just want to sit down and do nothing. Like, the art of doing nothing is probably the best feeling in the world. Well, yeah. I would say for myself right now, coming home and like not doing anything at all is like what I like yearn for.
Oh, exactly. And I guess what people don't give enough consideration to is how physically draining mental working is. So yeah. At your work, if you're stressed, if you're thinking, you actually get physically strained. My sister's an engineer working on the Central Rail Link project, and you don't want the tunnel to fall over. So she's so mentally drained that she, just from doing nothing, just thinking.
Well, yeah, it takes a lot of energy. That's a lot of energy you're burning in a 40-hour week. I think for me, when I transitioned from leaving home to then flatting, like, I don't think I've ever gone through something as hard as that. Like, that was really hard for me personally.
Oh,
you're having
everyone.
To take care of yourself as well as, you know, try and have a bit of fun. But it takes out so much energy for yourself to just like, yeah.
Look after yourself.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
Mm.
I'm only 22. Like, I'm still young. And yet I feel like I'm as tired as like a 50-year-old.
Yeah.
Not normal. Like, you shouldn't have to feel like you're like...
You have a part-time job with your football, though.
Well, yeah.
So...
Yeah. My schedule every week is hectic.
The other interesting thing when you join the workforce is actually learning how to deal with people and learning the politics of working.
Well, you got to learn hierarchy first.
Why do you say that?
Every company has a different culture.
You got to, like, sniff out the culture and read the room.
Yeah, I think corporate's different to small businesses. And
there's always a culture, though.
Yeah, for sure. But every culture's different. And every company has different expectations of how they hold, you know, you accountable for things. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. Just talking about that culture, for me, I worked doing landscaping one summer, and the culture was 10-hour days and lunch breaks with no one talking. No, that... It's not a great one, but what you mean by culture in the corporate setting is how those people interact and how decisions get made.
Exactly. And who's in charge.
Yeah.
I think that's the main one. You need to understand, I think, when you go into the business, like for me, when I went into like full-time work, I had to learn who were like the top five people I always have to go to, you know, IT. Or if I'm going for an example, like finance, I need to have a go-to person for the finance team. I need a go-to person for IT. Legal, I need a go-to person. And all the different categories within your corporate business, you need to understand who's your go-to, and you need to make sure that you have a good relationship with them. Because otherwise, you're just going to float around. Does that make sense? Like, you're just not going to be able to create those relationships that matter.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just going to make your life in that company hard.
Exactly. And it's good that you say it's hard, because what I've realized working is you have to adapt to the culture.
Mm-hmm.
The culture will never adapt to you and your personality.
No. It's like sometimes you got to be two people, one person in your personal life and one person at work.
Yeah.
And there's definitely, if your culture is different to how you usually are outside of work, you've got to be very different. And you got to hold yourself accountable to be, you know, be that person. Don't kind of falter.
Yeah, well, I guess
don't
it
get
depends.
Too comfortable.
I guess it depends what sort of environment you work in, because I feel like that's, you know, your answer is also because of the different environments you've worked in.
Yeah.
Some people have some really nice environments.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it also depends how many staff there are and if all departments talk to each other or if they don't.
So, yeah, so there's these whole collections of things that go into making a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other big learning curve you go through. Because for me, I came in hot to my first couple of jobs, and the manager always hypes you up like, yeah, bring change, go out and do it. But what you have to do first in businesses, and what I've realized, is you have to understand that culture before you do anything, because the way you approach it could really step on toes quickly.
Oh, you got to pick your battles.
Yeah.
You got to really pick your battles.
But you don't want to be battling too early as well.
No.
Just be a spectator.
Oh,
because you're going to make the worst calls in your earliest period of the time in terms of misreading the room, technically. Mm. And that's when you're going to have those big clashes.
Yeah.
And I guess that's another area where kids coming out of university don't understand about culture and not hanging out with people all like yourself.
Yeah. I think the one thing I really appreciated from university is, for my degree, I had to do a lot of presentations.
Mm.
And when I, you know, was at school, I hated speeches. I'd try and get out of them because I hated it. I hated public speaking. I hated speaking in front of a group of people. And when you go to uni, they just make you do it. They're like, you're doing it. And if you don't do it, you're not going to pass.
Yeah.
And so it forced me to have to be comfortable in a room of strangers. And now going into full-time work, I'm now comfortable being able to have meetings with, you know, external companies and internal staff, and having that kind of communication and being able to speak to a room and not feel like you're kind of caving in. You know, you got to just be open and, you know, proud.
Exactly. And those are the skills that you need for the workforce that haven't really been needed previously in life.
Mm.
And then, like you said, there's a huge element of working is talking and communicating with people, and how do you interact with those people?
Exactly. How do you network? How do you, you know, get to know other people from different groups and having different ideas? And that's another thing. Like, I've learned that every person has a different idea, and how I might see it, they might not.
Mm.
So you got to be open to have those conversations with different people in a room. You know, having those decisions and discussions to get to a specific point of what you want. Does that make sense?
Nah, I just find offices crack up because, like you said, everyone's different in there.
Yeah.
It's literally like the show The Office, where it's a blend of people of ages, sexes, races, and you've just chucked them in four walls, and it's just an experiment.
They have to get along with each other.
It's just an experiment about how to balance the boat.
Yeah, it's a strange concept.
It is.
It's a very strange concept.
Yeah, it's. I find it fascinating because I love observing people, and what I realized was how many different lives people lead, because me and my friends have all aimed in the one direction.
Yeah.
And I was mind blown. I'm like, I didn't know these people existed.
Mm.
You know, this is someone.
Mm. But you can also have conversations with people you never thought you would, you know, talk to.
Exactly.
In general.
But that's what I like about it. You end up just friends with such a diverse group.
Yeah.
And a real interesting group. And there's interesting people in any group, you know? So I loved being able to interact with different age groups and just getting on the right vibe with some people.
Yeah. I think work colleagues probably know more about your life than your friends do.
Well, that's the other big factor when you go from university to working that I found is you're not really, your mates are, you know, a few hours a week, but you're sitting next to this one dude or one chick every day.
For and 8 hours.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, like I have a new pod buddy.
Yeah.
Like, we call each other pod buddies now because we're in the same pod. And we're like, hey, girl. And, you know, like, we're so comfortable with each other and we've known each other, like, 2 months. You know, and we talk about anything and everything.
Exactly, the depth of the relationship.
Oh, it's like we've been best friends forever. And she's 33 and I'm 22. She's 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
And yet we just get along. And I'm like, this girl knows more about me and what I'm doing than my friends do.
Exactly.
Which is kind of a scary thought.
No, that's real interesting because Daniel Cook, if you scroll down the episodes, did the first couple of episodes, was my boss. So, obviously, we're good mates because we went on the show and he's 39, and I guess this is work culture again. I never loved anything more than a coffee and a good chit-chat about something real deep and interesting, and you're like, whoa, what? It's 10 o'clock, man, stop it.
Stop it.
I'm spacing out.
We're supposed to be working.
Yeah. No, it's funny. And speaking of which, how so much of it can form relationships, because that's actually where we met.
Yeah. Bum, bum.
And it was actually very much like The Office, because at the time you were the receptionist, which is so classic.
Yeah, it is.
So funny. Moving on, since we've warned everyone about the perils of going from uni to working, or for the majority of us listening, you know, reflecting on that early work life, because I feel like it's very character defining.
Yeah.
I would not say those problems I faced over that period were probably bigger than my university problems.
I've learned more about myself in the past year and a bit than I have in probably like 3 to 5 years of being in uni and high school. Which is usually your defining years.
That's when you usually find yourself.
But like, I've gone through a whole ton of emotions that I never thought I would go through, and I've learned more.
And I think that's because your world gets bigger. Mm. So like we were saying before, your world slowly expands, but then when you go from uni to working and you start doing everything, your world explodes in size.
Yeah, there's so many more options that you can choose.
And there's so many more chores you have to do.
Oh,
adulthood,
don't even get
never
started on those.
Adulthood never stops.
I know, and that's the scary thing. You never get a break.
To be honest, that's what my sisters complain about the most. You just doesn't stop.
I don't know how not more people are complaining about it. Like, I'm complaining about it all the time. And yet I thought other people would be too, but they must just keep it to themselves.
But that's what I mean by older people. It's just culture. Mm. Again, it's what we're in New Zealand expected to do.
Yeah, it's society's rules.
Yeah.
Or unspoken rules that you have to suffer and do your chores. And it's never ending and you're never going to get a break.
Yeah, basically. But I feel like, you know, we've got so much more productive as a society and we're so much wealthier, but yet we're still working more. We're actually technically working more hours a week than we were 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Damn, like, come on. Where's the progress? Like, the whole point of getting rich is so I don't have to work. Yeah. Not that I have to work harder for a bigger TV.
For a bigger TV.
I feel like that's a good summary. What would be your nutshell?
My biggest takeaway would be to give yourself a break, and not in terms of doing nothing, but in terms of like taking the pressure off yourself.
And not overthink it.
When you transition from going from graduating to, you know, full-time work, it's a very hard and nerve-wracking time of life, especially when you haven't left home yet. So it's like you just got to take the pressure off yourself to be like, this is going to be a bumpy ride. You know, I've got to strap myself in and I've just got to ride the wave.
And be positive and be proactive.
Yeah, and just learn from my mistakes instead of like being so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Because when you're young and going into a workforce, you're like, oh my God, I'm making like hundreds and hundreds of mistakes. And it's like people who have been in the, you know, business for way longer, they've been making thousands of mistakes, but they've just learned from them.
Mm.
Whereas like this is your time to learn from what you're doing.
And there's nothing to be ashamed or stressed out about.
No. And if you don't find a job or you're looking for what you want, it's fine. Take that time.
Exactly. And for me, when I was that accountant, I was like, this is it. I'm doomed. But even if you're unhappy in your current situation when you just start working, you just have to be optimistic and proactive. So I sat there and I was like, I'm not going to just put up with this. I'm not going to be unhappy, because maybe you can be happy in work. And that's what I found out. There are career paths where you will be more happy. There's some career paths which aren't happy career paths.
Well, I went from doing an event management degree to getting a job in reception. And that was my first job coming out of uni. And that was because I wanted to set myself up. I wanted to just start full-time job and get into it. And now I'm in, you know, corporate marketing, doing social media, which is like something I really like and enjoy. So it's given me a whole different perspective of you can do different jobs, even if that's not your degree. You know, there's different options for you to take.
Totally. This is a good point to actually pivot to the next subject. you are in social media marketing, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about today about the rise of Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, it's the history, the last 10 years of history in social media,
mm-hmm.
not that it's a subject yet, is basically the young people got on Facebook, the boomers came to Facebook and they took it over, and the young people moved platforms.
Yeah.
So everyone's moved over to Instagram now.
Yeah.
But what I was thinking, in that shift, when everyone moved over, and that's where young people interact now, is on Instagram. But in that shift, on Facebook, your friends are called your friends. On Instagram, they're called followers. So I wanted to know whether you think there's been a culture shift with the shift in the idea of friends to followers.
You've really, like, what's the word?
Stripped it out.
Yeah, like, really, that is how Harrison sees social media. Like, that is crazy. I think friends from followers, I don't know if it's just because Instagram can't use the same word as Facebook, you know?
No, it's the same company, but the whole idea, right, is a follower is someone who likes you, where a friend, where it's mutual.
Mm.
So doesn't that mean it's more driven to being liked than like an equal friendship thing?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because with sort of everyone, one of the rules is it's good to have more followers than people you're following.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of a social hierarchy thing going on, trying to get followers.
Well, that's where, you know, paying for followers comes in, which I think is bloody ridiculous. You should not be paying for random people to start following you.
But it's a stamp of approval. That's what it's viewed as. It's a massive stamp, to the point of you're probably more likely to get a date if you got some good stats.
I wouldn't go that far. That's a bit sad. But
but depending on the person.
But we've said it before, like, Instagram is your own personal CV. It is for people to understand the type of person you are and what you do in your life compared to what others do. It's like showing people your everyday life, showing people that you have so much fun and you're going out to parties and you're eating like glamorous foods and, you know, you're playing around with your dog and
yeah,
and you have a cool family, and it's like that is just the standard, you know, Instagram person. It's like your own personal CV for everyone to kind of have a look at.
Yeah, and I love the word you use, CV, because one of the things I quite enjoy is because it's a CV, people are presenting themselves in mm-hmm. different ways.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my sister's boyfriend at the time about how you can pick up a lot of cues about what the person values and how they want to be seen just mm-hmm. by looking at their Instagram.
Oh, 100%.
And then I went on his and I was like, kingfish, lots of boating, lots of outdoor activities. This guy's a keen go-getter mm-hmm. who likes to be outdoors and cares about X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
It really, and he was like, yeah, that's exactly who I am.
Mm.
You know, that's who I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he picks that style.
Yeah.
Because I guess everyone's Instagram style is different as well.
Well, yeah. And there's different aspirations and goals for different people when it comes to Instagram. You know, there's people who just post for the sake of, you know, they like that image and they want to put it up themselves. You know, they want to show what they like to people. Or there's people who go out there and take images for what their followers want, for what they think their followers are like wanting from them. And that's usually what an influencer is, you know.
Oh, so it's not authentic.
I don't know if you follow many people, but there's heaps of them.
Yeah, I got to say the majority of influencers would have a picture of themselves by themselves, just constantly with a different background.
But there's also, I follow people that benefit my, well, they benefit my well-being and they have interests that I have interests in. And so, like, one of them is Sarah's Day. I love her. She's amazing. She's got, like, a cute little family. She does health and fitness at the same time. So she, you know, I can see everything in terms of that. And I'm really invested in it. And one thing she always posts is, what would you guys like to see more of?
Yeah.
And she'll do little polls like, do you want more recipes or more like workouts or, you know, more
research.
Family? Yeah, so she's like trying to get an understanding of what her followers want from her so they can still be engaged with her. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, she's just like, what can I do to keep these followers invested in my life, you know?
You make it sound bad.
Well, it's not bad, but it's also like there's a whole ton of people that do it. And I just find it interesting that she's not only posting stuff that she likes, but she's also posting based on what she thinks her followers are wanting from her.
Mm.
She has a certain demographic and a certain type of person that follows her. And she's like, what do you guys want from me? What do you guys want to see? And I was speaking to someone about it, and they were saying that followers and consumers, they get invested in the lifestyle. They don't get invested in a brand. It's not about the brand. And if you don't have a story, people aren't invested in you and in your time and your brand. There's like hundreds of courses out there for social media platforms and for brands for them to kind of understand that you need to have a story to be able to be successful on social media. Because if you don't have a story and you're not different from other people, then people won't, you know, invest in your products.
Yeah, because I guess we have seen that rise in influencers like you're talking about it. Mm. And it's a new revenue stream in terms of marketing.
Yeah.
And that seems to have affected the culture. Like, I know a few people in my friend groups who are influencers or trying to pursue being an influencer. And from the outside, because it's new, I've seen how the younger kids change their behavior.
Mm.
Like, think of all the influence, the external influence coming from vloggers and Instagram people who, you know, you got Jake Paul and Logan Paul, like, who even I find really interesting. But
so is my brother.
But you got these whole different people that have pumped sort of American culture mainly down on us. So I've seen a real change in how people behave our age.
Mm. Yeah. I think if you're brought up in the social media, you know, era, you're very different to people who are older and kind of had to learn how to adapt to social media and all the platforms.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, young people nowadays, like for me, I got my Facebook I had to, you know, get into a certain football team, and that was my reward, was get a Facebook page. And I was like 16.
Whoa.
I had to get into a team for my mum to be like, yeah, you can have Facebook, you know, you can have, you know, a few of your friends following you. And then my brother gets Facebook when he's like 13.
Yeah.
And it's because he's brought up in that age, it just becomes a thing. You just have to do it.
Exactly. So it's become so normalized to how we interact that
if you don't have Facebook, you're kind of considered a loser.
Yeah, you're missing out. It's sort of like homeschooling.
Yeah.
Not that I have anything wrong with homeschooling, but it's this gap between how you socialize and how much you socialize.
It's extremely sad.
So in a weird way, these young kids are all pushed together to get on it.
And well, they're forced.
They're forced on it.
You don't
want
to be an outsider.
Yeah. You're forced on it. Then you're forced to compete in the hierarchy of followers.
Yeah.
And it has changed the behaviours and the personality traits of this younger generation and our generation.
Well, I think a lot
differently because of our different levels of exposure.
Yeah. If you think about it, back in the day, you would like, I don't know, I mean, when I was younger, you would go out to party and actually party. You wouldn't be taking photos or anything. You'd just be partying and having fun. Whereas now, you know, you need at least an hour of taking photos and getting that good, you know, content for people and getting that, you know, those good images. It's just become a thing. It's like, I need to take images when I go out.
Yeah.
You know, if I didn't take photos, did I really go out?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's crept up higher and higher. And I guess, like you said, Gen Z, who have finally sort of grown up into the just starting to be an adult, it's been the first generation to have that technology all the way through.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the first guinea pigs coming up. Like, we were guinea pigs, but this is like the full, this is
I had social media. I had Instagram from when I was year 8. So I was about 11.
You had Instagram?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. I wouldn't post on it, but I had Instagram.
Yeah, so your guys are the first people to come all the way through with
from start.
From the start.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're seeing with these kids now is the stats change on the culture.
Yeah.
And so they're having less sex and they're drinking less. Those are two big ones that have come out.
Really?
Yeah. It sounds positive because stuff like teenage pregnancies hugely reduced. That's mainly birth control, but also just that changing lifestyle. So there's lots of benefits, but I don't think it's also great that those two things have gone down, because drinking and sex is also correlated to confidence and talking and communicating and social interaction, you know?
Yeah.
Where it sounds, having less of that sounds like you're either a more holistic person or you're a more
closed off
or a lonely person. Mm. You're a more lonely person. You know, so it looks like, and it has been talked about a lot, and I'm not sure if I believe it, but like the communication skills have gone down.
Oh, I just think it's funny because I grew up in that age of like you would find a boy through, you know, Instagram or Facebook, or nowadays it's Tinder. Do you know how many, you know, successful relationships come from Tinder? And that's from online, you know, social platform. That's from swiping right and swiping left on who you like and who you don't like. And, like, that's a thing now. Instead of, like, going, you know, finding a guy, I don't know, out and then, you know, meeting them up in a normal circumstance, where it's now it's like you speak to each other over the phone for at least 2 to 3 weeks before you go on a date. So you don't get that, you know, one-on-one human interaction anymore. It's through the phone.
Yeah, so it's like a different sort of reaction, but the other thing with that is maybe you don't know what you want.
Mm.
You know, this is what you think you want. But like we said, you don't really know what you want at that age. And maybe you think, I want this sort of person.
Well,
but you haven't been out and met other type of people.
But it's also, you think that someone's a certain way based on
how they look,
their social platform. When really you meet them and you're like, actually, they're bloody boring. You know? Someone can make themselves look so different on social media to how they are in person. Someone can make themselves look extremely confident when really they are so shy. And this is the thing that's quite bad and negative towards the platform, is that people can hide behind a screen. And that's also in terms of bullying. That's why bullying has become a huge thing on social media.
Wow. And I think that's such a great point, because like you said, hide behind a screen. In my experience and in marketing, I was able to meet quite a few influencers and I found them some of the most shy, awkward people I've ever met.
Mm.
And maybe it's because of that. They want to be cool, but they don't have the confidence. So I'm going to put the curtains up and look like I'm cool, because I was blown away from these confident people online to very timid people.
Yeah.
And boring. I was like, you're boring. You're all boring. So there's this manipulation as well.
Have you seen the program Catfish?
Yeah.
That is like the best series of episodes to describe social media at the moment. It's just explaining that people hide behind a fake account now.
Yeah.
You know? And people think they are who they tell them they are, but they're not. They're just using, you know, pictures from another person's profile.
Yeah.
You know? So there's different aspects to social media, and I'm only speaking about, you know, one side, because there's many benefits. There's
heaps of positives.
There's many benefits.
But, in terms of education.
Yeah. I mean, this is how you find, you know, the people that inspire you to be the person you want to be.
Yeah.
You know, you follow all these different people.
I guess the first guinea pigs who have come through, it's not looking pretty. It's not looking good.
Well, it never used to. I think now the dynamic is changing and people are starting to use social media for a good cause, which is getting better.
Because that's probably one of my last questions is, do you think our social media use will get healthier?
Yes, 100%. And I think it already is.
Yeah, and I also think how they arrange the sites too.
Yeah. Well, there's different algorithms and whatnot, but, you know, I think come a couple of years, I think social media will be a really healthy place for you to be, and for you to be able to listen to different brands and different influencers and trying to, you know,
Yeah. Oh, I'm not so sure. I'm nervous.
Oh, really?
Well, come on. Like, the depression, anxiety, confidence. These people are just 20. What are they going to be like when they're 30? And I'm generalizing, but I'm saying there's a massive... Because they think loneliness is going to be one of the biggest killers coming up the ranks. And then you also got the depression and the eating disorders. So it's an anxious time because the stats at the moment aren't looking great. But what are the stats going to be when it's 30 or 40? Like, we're watching these problems still growing.
But there's always going to be problems in anything that happens.
But the problems is the problems are increasing in size. So we have more depressed people than we used to have. So if we have more people now, is that problem going to keep growing? Because, you know, you're like a tree. You know, what you're like in your 20s affects what you're going to be like in your 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
So we're still not really quite seeing the full flow on from a completely different childhood.
Yeah. I think on my social platform, I've seen a lot change.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a lot of positivity on mine, and I think it's because I follow people that I want to follow and that benefit me positively. But what I've also seen is people have a voice now. People use this platform to tell people about what they've gone through, you know? Like, this other influencer that I follow, she, you know, she went through anorexia and, you know, eating disorders. Now she's speaking up about it and using this platform to be there for other girls going through it.
Yeah.
And that she's using her platform for a good cause. And there's also another, you know, netballer she's a New Zealander, and she's just, you know, posted a post about, you know, she looks happy winning a medal, you know, for netball. And she then if you swipe right through the post, it's like 6 images of her crying and going through a tough time. And she uses her platform to show people that she may look happy, you know, winning a medal, but she's actually, you know, really upset and depressed. And she's using this platform to show people that not everything is what you see.
Wow. Well, that's really good. And I think that's a good place to finish, is essentially social media is looking scary.
Mm.
But there is hope that we're starting to understand it and starting to understand how we want to shape it to shape us in our culture and society.
It's giving people more of a voice.
That's
and
cool.
A platform to stand up for.
Well, that's a good place to move on to the next subject. The last thing I wanted to chat to you today about, I've found it really interesting dating you, is actually coming into the sort of competitive world of competitive sport.
Mm-hmm.
So you play a premier team at Eastern Suburbs for soccer. And what I've been so shocked about is how serious everyone takes it and how professional it is and how competitive it is. And for me, what I realize is I haven't been in a ultra competitive environment in basically forever.
What about since school?
This is a different type of competitiveness.
Okay, yeah.
Like, the competitive nature is real interesting. Because I'm not sure if many people have that much competitiveness in them to train 3 times a week and take up a full day on the weekend.
I don't think they have enough commitment to be able to do it. I think it doesn't come down to competitiveness. I think it comes down to commitment. They just don't want to, you know, put the time aside to dedicate it to that specific.
So you think a lot of other people are ultra competitive? I don't know. It seems like sports attracts competitive people because it is.
Oh, for sure. It definitely does.
And what separates them, you mean, is how much determination they have.
How much time you want to sacrifice. Like,
well, that's determination.
Is a major one, you know?
Yeah.
If it really floats your boat, you're really going to, you know, put the time aside. But if you're only half and half out, you're not really going to do it.
Exactly. And that's what I've realized. Like, sports has actually become a big thing in New Zealand. There's a lot of people living off sports now.
Yeah.
And a lot of people doing some hectic trainings for sport while doing other stuff like rowing. And it's just incredible because it's just come out recently. The government gives money to different sports in New Zealand to try and win medals at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And if you can justify, like, hey, we got 5 medals and we think we can get 8 medals, so can you give us $5 million?
Mm.
And that's what they've run it. So it's like ultra competitive. And the culture that bred was a real bullying nature with the athletes and just the mental strain on the constant level of competition.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't necessarily say it's bullying, but it's definitely a lot of pressure.
But they want to raise that pressure as much as possible.
Well, yeah. They want to push you to your limit.
Yeah, people play better when someone's just behind them, you know?
Yeah. So, I think that might be in the real international sport. Yeah. Not necessarily.
But with. It's come out. Rowing was a big one. Yeah. That they had a really unhealthy culture of sort of tormenting people and just pinning people up and just...
Wow.
So what they've decided now, the government, one of the factors they take into consideration is whether they're meeting the guidelines of a healthy industry.
Yeah. I think we had our media day for our club last week, and we had to all do individual interviews. And one of the girls from football, Annie, she brought it up to me a couple of days ago, and she thought it was quite interesting. And the girls compared to the boys, the same question was asked was, what do you enjoy most about playing for Eastern Suburbs? And every single girl in our team said team culture. It was like the first thing they said, like, we love the girls, we love our group of, you know, footballers, and it's the team culture for me. That's what does it for me. That's why I stay. And for the boys, none of them said team culture. Every single one of them said, I like the professional environment. And that literally, for me, and obviously for Annie at the time, we were both like, wow, like that just really shows, you know, what we all value in terms of coming into a competitive sport. Like for us, all the girls, we're like, we love obviously the professional environment, but not only that, it's like we get along with the girls and it's fun and it's exciting and it's an outlet for all of us to enjoy together. And so that is what drives us to stay there.
Mm.
Whereas well, for that, the men, that would it's
breed
different.
So that would breed a healthier culture than exactly. The other one.
I don't necessarily know for other clubs. I can only speak for what I've gone through in my clubs, but that was one of the major things for us. And I thought it was just interesting to see, you know, the difference between, you know, our team and their team, even though we're at the same club.
Why?
I don't know. I think for men, there's different leagues and different, you know, things. And for men, they want to maybe, you know, go further in it. They want to go overseas and want to play, you know, in the Europa League.
That's probably the difference.
The EPL, whereas for us, we just want to play at the highest level we possibly can. And for those who want to push on, they push on. But we just want to play at a very high level and
wow.
And just get along with each other and have fun with it as well. You know, there's no point in playing if you're not enjoying it.
Yeah, that's probably good for my next question is, why are so many adults dropping out of these sports? Because what we've seen is a sharp decline in adults playing sports over the last few years.
Personally, I think it's commitment. That's like a main thing. Time. You don't have enough time in your week to be able to
because you're working.
Like, that's you're working.
You're getting punched in the face.
Exactly. If you've got kids, you know, you've got to find whoever, the wife or the husband, like, they have to sacrifice their time to, you know, look after the kids and for them to, you know, go off and go to trainings and weekends and, you know.
Yeah, because that's almost my point. Like, we've seen this huge level because of the more money going into sports and the people taking it so much more seriously. The expectation and level has risen so much. But because of people's lack of time, it actually is going to make people leave the sports more. So almost this raise in standard, has it come at the expense of people playing the sports? Because there's a difference between only one training a week and two trainings, or two trainings instead of three trainings.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge.
And people drop off at each of those levels of commitment.
Yeah, for sure. I think if you're an adult and, you know, you need to... Well, not need to, but if you're needing to do overtime or a couple of hours here and there, or, and this is the main thing, time difference. Like, if you leave work, for me, if I leave work at 4:30, I'm going to get to training because, you know, the traffic's gone. But if I, you know, leave at 5, I'm going to be stuck for an hour.
Mm.
That makes it harder for me to be able to get to these trainings. So it's like, it's all these extra factors in as well. It's not just like...
That commitment.
It's also like getting to training, eating before training or eating after training. Like for me, I don't get home till 9:30 and I'm eating, you know, dinner really late. And so it's like these different things and elements that you don't think about. And it's like, it all adds up to like, do I really want to put all this time and effort and move my life around like this just for the sport?
Yeah, like we've made sport so much more serious.
Mm.
Like, because one of the ideas is it's not only how many people you have playing sport, big countries, but how well your programmers going up. So if you, from a young age, if you get all these players playing real serious, real big hours young, you get richer players. And we've seen that in New Zealand. We have much better sports players now. The cricketers, world class, from our thing. So it shows how good our systems are.
Yeah.
But they're almost too good that it's a job.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can get paid to play.
But even without getting paid, though, it's a lot.
Oh, like gas, of that extra stuff, you know,
rowing you're having to fly. 4 a.m.
Exactly.
That's the worst.
It's like, it's just all these different things and they all add up. And it's like, you're sacrificing a lot, especially if you're not getting paid for it. It's like, I have to be doing this for the love of the sport and for the love of me playing. If I do not love it, there's no point in me doing it because I'm technically doing it for free.
Yeah.
Why would I do something for free if I don't like it?
Yeah. This brings me to my next question. Like, we want more people playing in sports in New Zealand. We're seeing less of them, but also the benefits from sports. And for you, and looking at you, it looks like playing sports, it's not just about competition, but again, learning social skills, learning confidence, learning like responsibility.
Learning how to be in a team.
Yeah.
I never used to, when I first started putting my CV together to find a job, and my parents said, add in that you play football. And I was like, why? They don't care. Why would they care I play football? And they're like, because it shows that you can be, you know, in a team and you are a team player and you can work together to win and to find solutions. And I was like, whoa. Like, I didn't see it like that, you know? And like, I have coaching badges. I put that on my CV now because it shows that I can be a so-called leader, you know, and I have those characteristics to be able to coach and run things and be organized.
And those are skills you're not really taught in school. So if you're not playing sports.
If you're that kid in, you know, PE who hates PE and just sits in the corner, like, it's not going to help you.
No.
Whereas all those kids who thrive off sport and get involved.
Or just try. Like, you don't have to be good.
Exactly.
Your hand eye is probably better than mine.
Yeah.
It's okay.
But it's still participating and you're still having fun.
Exactly. So there's so many benefits to sport. So what are the solutions? Like, we want more people playing sports. What do you think are the solutions?
To just, I think, get more people involved and slowly get people in when they're younger. And are you necessarily talking about older people?
Yeah, okay. Adults.
I guess when it comes to older people, and this is just an idea that's come to my head, but, you know, you could provide a bub club, you know, where, you know, you bring your kids down and they have their own little like club that they have while the, you know, parents play or just stuff like that, and just get them more included in the culture of the club, and or like bringing their kids round to like a quiz night. This, it gets more people involved.
Exactly, and that's probably the other thing I've seen is before coming and watching your games is a community.
Yeah.
Like these people come down and these people know each other.
Yeah.
And there's politics and there's
ridiculous
there's
amounts.
Like chats and there's rivalry and friendships, but there's also a community and a purpose.
I think Eastern Suburbs does it extremely well.
Yeah.
Like extremely, like we have our own social media person. They do quiz nights as well.
Yeah.
You know, they did it over Zoom, over lockdown. They were like, get involved in the club quiz and let's do this. Or we have, you know, a cafe now opened and they do all these open days.
They
and
have a bar. I didn't know that they had bars at footy games.
Exactly. And they do food and beverages and it just brings more people in and it includes a bigger demographic of people.
Than just the players.
Like there's not I don't think there's a lot of older teams in our club, which could be an area they could improve on, maybe. I'm not sure. But I think clubs just need to start looking at older people's lives if they want their participation more and just breaking down how can this person come to training or what benefits them in this way of being a part of a sport and still coming to a club and enjoying themselves. Like when I left Nationals for school, I was so upset. I'm like, I'm never going to go to a tournament ever again. I'm too old now. Like, and tournaments were like the best part, you know, of being a team. You're like going away, hanging out with the gals, you know, like all hanging out in your different rooms and stuff. And then like when it finished, I was like, oh my God, it's ended and I'm too old. So it's like maybe, you know, you start doing those types of things of more, doing more tournaments.
More and, social interactions.
Yeah.
So that's why we want this revival. And like you said, it's community. And that's one thing we're struggling with at the moment. So we need to make it more accessible by making the sports more flexible.
But maybe put more money into it too.
Yeah, but more flexible so it can have a bigger community, because that's one of those leading things for depression and anxiety.
I have a great example. I've been to a tournament in Australia with Central United and the Croatian tournament. So the community in Australia, there's a significant amount of Croatians that live in Australia. So they have these specific Croatian clubs that allow those communities to be able to play together. And every year, once a year, they have this Croatian tournament.
Yeah.
And there's under 12s, and then there's under 20s, and then there's women's, men's, and then there's the seniors. And they have like all these different age groups playing at the same time.
So that's a huge community.
Yeah. And then they also, every night, and there's five nights, they have different, you know, they have a ball night, and then they have bring your parents and have like a big quiz night.
Yeah.
And then the last night is just this massive gig. And it's just bringing all these different types of people together, especially older people as well, to just enjoy going away with a team and just like going.
Feeling a connection.
Yeah. And just getting involved.
Wow.
And it's like, we don't have that in New Zealand.
Wow.
Like ever.
Well, I think we just solved how to make everyone's lives happier. I want to go to that Croatian tournament.
I know, it was so much fun.
Cool. Oh, well, I think this is a great place to end it, because I think we just solved a huge problem. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Shania. You might be invited back maybe sometime. Not going to confirm.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding. Thanks so much. That was incredible.
That's okay.
All right, thanks everyone for listening. I really enjoyed that episode, and I enjoyed some different discussions, but I really think we got to some trippy places in that conversation. So thanks everyone for listening. Please subscribe and tell everyone you know about this podcast, everyone you think would love this podcast, because I love making it, and I love that it's just ticking on really nicely, guys. So I appreciate it. Talk soon.
That was The Big Picture. Hit the subscribe and share the word.